This is the Genuine Humans podcast, brought to you by Social Element. I'm Tamara Littleton.
And I'm Wendy Christie.
In our podcast, we'll discover the stories of the leaders behind the brands and the trailblazers who are making a real difference in our industry. We'll delve into how they got to where they are today.
And we'll hear about the genuine humans who supported and influenced them along the way.
Welcome back to Genuine Humans podcast, and I'm here with my co-host who's been on a rather fabulous holiday, Wendy. It's lovely to see you.
Lovely to see you too. This is the first time we've seen each other since I got back from my delayed honeymoon in the Maldives, which was just wonderful.
Oh, I'm so pleased, and you're looking very brown and relaxed. And I'm also so happy that we've got a bit of a special guest on today, actually. So we have Abby Dixon joining us. And Abby is the founder of Labyrinth Marketing and also the founder of The Whole Marketer, which incorporates like a brilliant podcast that I'm a huge fan of, and a book and a whole program for marketing leaders and teams. So welcome to the podcast, Abby.
Thank you very much for having me.
You just did a one with Ellie Norman, actually, and it was some amazing number. What number are you up to now with your podcast?
123.
Oh, wow.
That's just incredible. You are such a pioneer in this space. I love it.
Thank you.
So, Abby, do you want to actually just share more about The Whole Marketer, about what you're doing with that program, but also can we do that classic of can you go backwards and tell us more about your early career, how you got to where you are now?
Definitely. So before The Whole Marketer, before Labyrinth, I was a client-side marketer. So spent 15, 16 years in client-side roles, brand management roles, from the government to consumer durables at Bosch to FMCG at the likes of Britvic, and working on brands like Pepsi. Headed up the marketing function for the UK and Ireland for Burger King, and was also marketing controller for lots of different brands at Premier Foods. So Lots and lots of household brands, and got to a point in my career where I thought, I don't know if I can keep going with the strat planning. Well, love helping others do the strat planning, but not necessarily going through that cycle again. And thought, also combined with the crossroads of becoming a mum, I thought, actually, time for a change. So I started doing consultancy first in-house at Britvic, and then I went on to set up my own consultancy called Labyrinth Marketing, which after a period of reflection, you know, feeling at a crossroads, realizing that I was starting to lose some fulfillment, I went and sought the support of a coach. And that not only was one of the things that sparked me to then go on and train to become a coach myself, but also that crossroads allowed me to really reflect on the things that are important to me, the things that I value, the things that I'm really great at, which is around writing long-term strategy, but also noticing a big do different that needs to happen with consultancies, which is not just writing the strategy and everyone gets a line and goes, yeah, we agree.
Yeah.
But actually staying and helping everyone deliver it. So whether that was additional resource, whether that was building brand propositions, innovation pipelines, appointing agency partners, you know, whatever was needed in order to make that strategy start to come to life. So Labyrinth's, you know, it's still going, but I very much have had a bit of a Jerry Maguire moment, which is where The Whole Marketer was born. Mm-hmm. So probably about year five, I would say, into Labyrinth, I was on holiday. And in the capacity of Labyrinth, I was working with marketers, and still am working with marketers, a whole different setup. So whether I was mentoring or coaching them, whether I was training them, because I've been a trainer now for coming up to 17, 18 years. Originally on the CIM professional qualification, which I used to do when I was client side, but now more recently working with them direct in-house as a trainer, and lots of other bodies like AIA and AAR, etc. And so whether it was training capacity, coach capacity, consultancy capacity, I just got this overwhelming feeling of lack of fulfillment happening in the profession. Mm. And I was sitting on a sun lounger in Cyprus, my boys were in the pool, and I was just reflecting on those 2 weeks gone by. And I thought, it doesn't matter who I speak to, the seniority, the industry sector, those feelings of lack of fulfillment and lack of clarity and overwhelm were apparent across the board. And so with that Joe Maguire moment, I thought, we can't have this. As someone who is passionate about the marketing profession, who does so much work in making marketers successful at what they do in training, but also now having become a coach, how can I impart some of that personal understanding that you need to have in order to become more fulfilled in what they do? And so the whole marketer was born into my iPad. I type furiously about all the things and just kind of must get it out, you know, much to the annoyance of my husband, but I had to get it out. And when I returned, I was like, right, what can I do? So it started as a podcast, which you just mentioned, which was very much as part of the research for my book. And it started as a way in which for me to get other people's thoughts, opinions on what is happening in the marketing profession, the skills that marketers need today to grow the brands and business of tomorrow. Yet here we are 123 episodes later, and it just has taken off. I know it resonates with many marketers that want and need to have the clarity on the skills that they need today to grow the brands and businesses of tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Acknowledging the fact that marketing has shifted massively from a support function to one leading the long-term commercial agenda. But as a result of that, as has the way or the how in which we do things. So the way in which we lead, the way in which we bring plans to life and connect on a deep-rooted emotional connection with our consumers and customers, you know, the way in which we have to gain buy-in across the whole organization as we are leading. But last but by no means least, also the personal understanding. So how do I build that personal understanding in others so that they can actually address the fulfillment side of things? So getting closer to what their strengths are, what they bring to the world, owning that, having the confidence behind that, being able to really understand their values and their purpose and the things that really sit in the deep center of their soul so that they can make more conscious decisions around what it is that they need to bring into their life, but into their career, but as well as facing into the things that are going to hold us back. So those limiting beliefs, the imposter syndrome, the resilience we're going to need. And most recently, the work that I'm doing around helping marketers overcome burnout.
Has that been happening a lot more? Have you seen that sort of the burnout bit that people are asking more about that then?
Definitely.
Yeah.
I think for me, it's the role of the whole marketer is to think about the holistic development, but the person behind the brand and business. And I think the cases of burnout has had a light shine on it, but how we address that hasn't. And that's the bit that I'm trying to really help, a bit of a movement behind. So, you know, it's great that we're shining a light, but we need to do things to address it. And how can we prevent it? How can you build that personal understanding in order to put the right things in place for you, your things that you need to put boundaries around, things that you know that fill your cup up, but also making sure that those fundamental things that are causing a lot of cases of burnout around lack of clarity, lack of prioritization, lack of pushback, saying no to things that get kind of cascaded to us from senior management, how we put those things in place so that we can prevent and make sure that we don't have reoccurring cases. So it's become a podcast, but also a lot more of my focus now is actually getting in front of marketing teams and helping them develop holistically. So whether that's training, coaching, mentoring, keynote speaking, you know, whatever it takes in order to create a movement and a philosophy being embedded in an organization for them to really think about developing marketers holistically so they can be great at what they do, but more importantly, fulfilled.
Thank you. I love that. Loving your work.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing that, Abby. If you don't mind, I'd be really interested in going even further back, even before your career journey, to what you were like as a child. So what were you like as a child?
It's funny that when I knew that this question was coming, I actually went and had a phone call with my mother. And I said, what was I like as a child? And she laughed out loud down the phone to me.
Always a good sign.
Yeah. Always a good sign. So these are the following things that I can report that she commented on. And then I'll also add how I felt as a child as well. So she said, I was strong-minded, wanted to do it. Even if I was told not to do something, I was going to do it anyways. A people person, always going up to others and talking to them. And my mum, being quite introverted herself, was almost like the way that I actually made friendships for her. I'd kind of just go up to random people in the park and start talking to them, and she kind of came along for the ride. Always very helpful. She said I was always the one helping at school, helping others, getting stuck in. I love school. Never had to push me. I was always pushing myself. And teachers all loved me. She was very caring, always looking after others, especially little ones, and that I had no fear. So I'd always just go for it or just do it, which apparently also got me in a lot of trouble. So she recalled a story of, I wanted to go and see the penguins when we were at the zoo, and I just got in with the penguins.
You got in with the penguins?
And she had to chase me, got in with the penguins, and apparently it was like a 3-foot drop that my mum had to climb in to try and get in amongst the penguins and get me back out. So clear themes of just getting involved, going ahead and doing it anyways. But what I remember as a child is loving to read. Like, library was my favourite place to be. I'm probably not the same as a lot of children in growing up that would prefer the summer holidays. I used to be a bit disappointed in the summer holidays, and so used to go to the library to get my fix. Absolutely love books. And I also have a lot of memories. So I have had very young parents, and always kind of the lone child in amongst kind of parties or social gatherings. And a story that always got retold was how I used to stand on the table and sing Shout by Tears for Fears for everyone, and everyone would clap along, and I used to absolutely love it.
Some clear themes coming out.
I've seen that side of you.
You have. You have indeed.
There's some really clear themes coming out there that you can really see have carried forward to your adulthood, sort of supporting people and your entrepreneurial spirit even, and hard work, all of that. How important would you say your environment was that you grew up in?
I grew up in quite an unusual environment, to be honest. So I was actually a forces child. My mother is Maltese. My father was English. And we travelled all over. So I was the new girl in school. Oh, I've lost track of time. 11 times, maybe 12 times.
That's tough.
During my childhood, which was really, really tough. Really, really tough. And although I sit here and think, oh, I haven't got that childhood home that I grew up in, you know, that place that I return to time and time again, what it has taught me is, you know, the ability to connect with people really quickly, you know, particularly as a child. Social settings are key to survive on the playground. So, you know, breaking into friendship groups that are already established. We also traveled quite a lot around the world. So not only living between two cultures growing up, we also lived in many different cultures. And a lot of the work that my father did growing up was a cultural attaché role or lots of logistics. So, you know, I was surrounded by different cultures and different families, from those from Latin America to living in America to living in Germany. So understanding other people's cultures, appreciating not everybody's the same, really trying to build an understanding of others and what's important to them, was something that was just part of growing up for me. And potentially being in situations that most young children wouldn't be in. So, you know, I remember quite a lot being at formal functions, for example, and having to kind of go and shake grown-ups' hands and explain what happens in Britain and why, what our culture is all about, you know, to other people from different nations, you know, at quite a young age. So a real sense of appreciation of other cultures, and not everyone's the same. And I think that's really carried through as a theme for me of not judging, you know, staying in unconditional positive regard, trying to appreciate what it's like for somebody else to walk in their shoes, not what it's like for me to walk in their shoes, has definitely something that has held stead for me.
I love that. I've never thought of it like that before. What it's like for that person to walk in their shoes, not for me to walk in their shoes. I'm going to give that some thought. Were there particular people that you looked up to?
I don't think there were particular people I looked up to, but thinking about this question, there was a key theme of people that I really respected. And one of my values is helping others. And if I think to all the people that stood out, were all people that helped others. So one of them being my Auntie Doris. She would help anyone. She still does to this day, still helps out at charities and works in soup kitchens or the equivalent of that in Malta. But also people that helped me out. So my dad was often away a lot in his role in the forces. So the person that helped me fix my bike when they appreciated that, you know, my dad wasn't around to do that, or the person that helped me learn to dive once for the same situation, or the people that actually ask, how can I help you? Mm-hmm. And whether that's in work or life, those people really stand out to me. And my father passed away the end of September last year.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
And I found that time really reflective. And what I realized is that my desire to help others, and as one good friend said to me, you will often jump into situations others that are uncomfortable and will avoid them because they don't know what to say and they don't want to do, you know, you'll jump in and sit alongside that person. That actually was something that my dad used to do. So I can think of many situations where, for example, he was driving me to a sleepover as a teenager and there'd been a car accident and my dad pulled the car over and said, look this way and don't look back until I tell you to. And he jumped on in there and helped the people in the car accident and got the ambulance and, you know, held their head until someone arrived and whatever else he did that I don't know because I had to turn my head away. But he was very much that person. And it made me reflective of that's actually how I am. And I didn't realize there is any other way, because when you've grown up watching that as normal behavior, it just becomes ingrained in who you are.
And when you were little, did you have any sense of what you wanted to be when you grew up?
Well, there were three things. First, I wanted to be a policewoman. So they came into my school and showed how to do CPR and the other things that they did, and I was really inspired. Then as time went on, I thought, I want to help young children, so I wanted to be a paediatrician. And then I realised, I don't like blood, so that's not going to work out well. And somewhere along the line, I realized that I wanted to work in business, but I was fascinated by people. So, you know, I studied psychology, A-level, and absolutely loved it. And so that's where the love of marketing came from, because that is the crossover into marketing, you know, understanding people and their behavior. And that's where the desire for marketing came from. But yes, policewoman, pediatrician, come marketer.
Come in. Back up to date or thinking through your journey again, were there people over the years who influenced your career or your life in general?
I think there's definitely people that have influenced my career, and I would say probably more so on the client side, and as an influence. Probably the people that gave me a chance, you know, the person that gave me a chance to come and work in consumer durables when I didn't have consumer durables experience, or the person that gave me the role at FMCG when I didn't have FMCG experience. You know, the people that could see that my passion and my skills were transferable and want that level of energy in their team and not necessarily that classic cookie cutter that had come before me. So I think that's definitely those that have influenced. But as far as life in general, I mean, friends are so important to me. Friends are, you know, my family. Yes, I have a family, but they are the people that I surround myself with. And those are the people that have the biggest influence on me. Those people that hold me true, hold me real, encourage me, support me, whether that's people I've worked with, whether that's people I've known for a long time, whether it's people I've not known for a long time. It doesn't matter to me. And I always say reason, season, lifetime. People come into your life for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. And that acceptance of different people are coming into your life at different times for a reason, almost like the universe has put them there for you to support them or for them to support you. I live by that principle, and you know, I have a great network around me of wonderful human beings, and also put a lot of energy into being there for a lot of wonderful human beings as well.
I'm gonna pull you back to something you said before about one of your drivers being supporting people, and I was just going to ask, actually, what is your main motivation for doing what you do now?
It's fulfillment.
Mm.
There is something about living your best life. And I've got a sign behind me that says, do what makes your soul happy. And I do live to that principle. If I take the classic definition of what a purpose is, which is, you know, what are your talents, the things that you're born with, your skills that you've learnt, the values that you carry and the things that you're passionate about. You know, I'm passionate about the marketing profession. My values around helping others, being honest. My skills around putting people at ease, you know, thinking strategically, really driving people's change agendas and within their organization for their brands. and a talent around potentially a naturally born confidence because of the way I was brought up that we've just discussed, those things combined are why I do what I do. I think once you've learnt what your values are and you know what your purpose is and you're living a purpose-driven life, it's no longer work.
Mm.
So I'm getting up every day to make sure marketeers are more fulfilled and more successful in what they do. And it doesn't matter in what shape or form that that comes. That's what I'm here to do. So that is why I do what I do.
And do you think that marketing and, you know, leadership in as a whole is changing for the better? I'm going to ask you like a big question now. So what trends are you seeing? You work with so many different people. What are the trends? Is it changing for the better? Any advice that you can give?
I think it's changing for the better in the sense that marketing is being seen now, and potentially for some, a lot of organisations during COVID, almost they pivoted to marketing and going, so what do we do? And that left the door open a little bit of a jar to go, we know what to do. Let's just kick that door right open and show them what we can do. And to become that growth engine of change. And for a lot of organisations, that's been the way for a while. So it's great that we're seeing the increased understanding of what marketing brings and can drive as an engine of growth to businesses. I think the downside to that is that the breadth of role is massively increased.
Yeah.
And so a lot of marketers, although we've moved from a support function to one leading the commercial agenda, that means that we're being brought into a lot more commercial conversations, whether enjoyable or not enjoyable for lots of people. And that could be, you know, reviewing the cost price of something as well as, you know, managing the profit and loss. And all these things are really important, but it's moved away from what a lot of marketers enjoy, which is the ability to build communications, you know, activate, bring things into market. And so it's a real mix of those two things. So there is potentially a little bit of review happening amongst marketers of going, this isn't what I came into marketing for. Do I still enjoy it?
Hmm.
I think there's also the time pressure that all of those things have brought. And so if I think about some of the themes that I'm seeing around potentially the lack of clarity a lot of marketeers have, the lack of clarity on the long-term vision or strategy of the business and the goals and what it is that as a marketing function they're trying to do, what it is that they individually need to contribute, you know, all of those things laddering into each other. It's not happening as well as it used to. And I think a lot of it's to do with time. Time for the marketing leader to be able to take a step back and really think about all of those things, but also the time to be spent with the individuals that they're allocating those tasks to understand the context and the reason why. And those two things are creating lots of levels of kind of demotivation, as well as the work being produced or the work being briefed out, not having that context and making it more difficult for everyone that's involved in those processes. So I think time, obviously we've talked about the increase in burnout, we talked about the lack of fulfillment, but for me it's really about do leaders use their own personal understanding enough to really think about their role as leaders? And I believe we lead at all levels, whether that's leading a campaign or leading a whole organization or leading a function. We're all leading, but are they putting as much energy into defining that style of leadership that is authentic to them and bringing that to life in the initiatives and the work streams that they need to in order for the marketers in their care to feel motivated? No. And so there are some that are doing it well, and there are some that are on the start of the journey, and some that haven't even realized. And I was talking to someone the other day, is that what I do is needed, but they're not always aware that they need it yet.
Yeah.
And it's a real journey. And I find that the people that have come for help with the whole marketer are those that have been on a journey themselves. So whether that is they've been on a journey of personal understanding, or they've led in an organization that didn't work for them, or they've had other people in their care, whatever that may be, something has happened where they've had to realize the importance of all of those things. And they're the people that I work with the most. I think, you know, to your point, patterns, I would like to see more people in leadership positions really slowing down, taking the time to really build that clarity, communicate that clarity, not just once, but repeatedly. checking the marketers and their care have the context and are motivated to deliver. It's like we're constantly asking marketers to run marathons, but we're not telling them why they're running it, how long the marathon is, what success looks like, what time they need to run it in, what the cause is behind the marathon, what those key milestones are on the journey, what support they're going to get on that road. We're not. We're just telling them to run. So it's no wonder a lot of marketers aren't feeling as motivated as they could be, are starting to feel burnout. If we slow down, get more clear on the races that we want to run, the races that we need to run, and also for those in that position of leadership to push back, you know, those side requests that come in, can you just push back more? Because every can you just is taking a little bit of coin, a little bit of motivation away from the person that's doing it, particularly when they don't understand why and what the motivation is in it for them or the organization.
That's such a good message to take away from this. And just making sure that you're practicing what you preach, as it were. What does this year look like for you? Have you got some good balance? Are you feeling optimistic about the year? What does it look like?
So I'm going to carry on doing a lot more on the burnout profession. So watch this space as far as new episodes coming out. I'm going to do a little mini series for burnout with two professionals and then two marketers as well. One client side, one agency side. But what I will say is that it's not just client side, agency side. It's any marketer at any level, or any human being, to be frank, yeah, that can be affected by burnout. And so there's a lot more that I want to do there. Lots more articles, a lot more speaking, a lot more kind of training in businesses, as well as those programs I mentioned in The Whole Marketer. So a lot more programs around marketing leadership, you know, developing your authentic style, and a lot more workshop, allowing people to really face into some of those things that are not going right in their organizations. So resilience, limiting beliefs, potentially holding back the team, helping leaders find clarity, whether that's capability or strategy, whatever's required in order for marketeers to be successful and fulfilled in what they do. And then to your point on balance, yeah, I've got some goals that I want to achieve this year personally. So I'd like to learn how to play the drums.
Oh, I played when I was 14, 15, 16. It's the most wonderful thing. Oh. I sometimes go back to it. Honestly, when you get a drum kit, I'm just inviting myself around now. Sorry, I've gone way too far ahead.
Come on over tomorrow.
I got a bit overexcited. Let's start a band.
Well, you sing, I'll play the drums. I mean, all I've done so far is buy a drumming pad and some drum sticks. So let's, wonderful, you know, give me a little bit of a starter. But yes, I do want to play the drums. And it's something that I kept saying that I was going to do in retirement. And life experiences have taught me you can't wait for retirement.
No, bring all the fun stuff forward.
Bringing all the fun stuff forward. So drumming, although I've not started, is on the list. I want to get to Es Fedra, which I am actually going to at the end of next week. I've heard it's very spiritual. Magnetic pulls. I've got quite spiritual in my older age. And which is kind of interlinked to my love of Cornwall. So I'm going to Es Fedra and a few other kind of trips throughout the year that I'm really looking forward to.
Fantastic. And on that note, we're going to move on to the bit of the podcast where we get a little bit more personal. So let's start with your idea of a perfect weekend, and maybe you've got it coming up.
Well, a perfect weekend is spent in Cornwall. For those that know me well, know it's my spiritual home. So a perfect weekend for me would involve lots of beach walks, potentially getting in the ocean, letting the power of the North Cornish waves beat me. It's almost like something like, I feel like the ocean is a woman. So it's like, come on, bring it on. Like, it's just this energy. And I give things back to the ocean. She gives me more energy, like, yes to the ocean. Spending time in the ocean, whether that's paddleboarding, in the sea, cold water swimming, I would have a pina colada. There is a place that has the best pina coladas in Cornwall, the Colonial, for anyone that is going soon, on Tolcarn Beach. So I'd have one, if not two, of those. I would take a stroll to the harbour. The harbour is full, obviously, with the catch that's coming from the day, but just loads of different street food eateries that you can order across all of them and they get delivered to your table. So I would have a massive food fest. Everything from crab to Mexican to, you know, seafood, whatever it is, and wait till sunset, wait till low tide and walk back. That would be my perfect day.
That sounds heavenly. If you were walking on stage and there's an intro track blaring out, What is it?
Now, this question, which I knew it was going to be coming up, caused me a lot of pondering and thought, because as Tamara knows, I love my music. So I took this question very seriously. And there is music and songs that I listen to before I personally go on stage. But I've never thought about what plays out when I'm on stage. So a couple of songs that I listen to really pump me up. No Limit by Two Unlimited. One of my favourite songs is Dream by the Cranberries for Reflective Mode.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
And Dreamer by Supertramp. I mean, tell me a better song to G you up. But as a Bruce Springsteen fan, it had to be a Bruce Springsteen track. So I've gone with Dancing in the Dark.
Oh, excellent choices. I'm with you all the way on all of those.
I'm still thinking about the Colonial because I've had the crab sandwiches there and they were amazing. So next time I go back there, sorry, I was still stuck in food. I was listening, I promise. But I was a little bit like, oh, crab sandwiches.
They do amazing crab sandwiches.
They really do. Bit more random now for you, Abby. Do you have a favourite dinosaur?
No, but I did do some research and there is a dinosaur that is in the water called a Plesiosaurus or a Plesiosaurus. I'm probably not saying it right. That would have been me if I was a dinosaur.
There you go. There you go. And what are you doing when you feel most alive?
Music, dancing, full blast, has to be vinyl. In the living room, / as I described earlier, standing in the sea with the waves crashing me. Like if it knocks me over a little bit, like that's when I feel most alive. It's like, come on, I get up and I take another one. That's when I feel most alive.
Okay, and is it possible that you could combine dancing and the sea? I'm just
well,
think about that.
Gotta be.
Apparently there is some silent discos happening at some local beaches, so I'm going to try and combine the two. I don't know if you can get in the sea with the headphones, but I'll definitely give it a go.
Yeah, I feel like this is the next evolution of the whole marketer as well. Like the whole marketer retreats involving dancing and silent discos.
100%. 100%.
How would your friends describe you?
Once again, reached out knowing this question was coming.
Love it.
They described me as open, authentic, driven, nurturing, caring, generous, supportive, funny. And I would say it's not funny. I would say it's witty. And the reason I say that is I think I'd be really good on Gogglebox.
I love that that's our benchmark now.
Absolutely.
I'm not like, let's stand up or crack a joke or deliver a joke, but I'm definitely in the space of those witty remarks that happen when you're watching or seeing something. So yes, if Gogglebox needs someone new, I'm down. Absolutely down for that.
And what was your favourite trip that you've ever taken? And it could be work or holiday.
Most favourite trip I ever took was probably the one that pushed me the most out of my comfort zone. And in fact, I was at a friend's house the weekend before last and I was reliving this to them. And I went to the outback in Australia and I slept out amongst the stars. And even one night out on a camper where there was coyotes around. And apparently I was to wake up if the tin cans shook. Yeah, so needless to say, I didn't really sleep well that night, but it was so hot, like words cannot describe how hot it was. Went to go and see Uru or Ayers Rock in the outback, and even one morning we got up at silly o'clock and did a hike. So for people that know me well, I mean, I don't run anywhere unless I'm in danger. The most I do is walk my dog. I was hiking up this massive hill and somebody said to me, this is called Heart Attack Hill.
That's marketing for you.
isn't it just, but you know, they were all things that pushed me outside my comfort zone but also made me really dig deep, you know, kind of that digging deep and finding the inner strength to cope with the heat, to cope with the lack of sleep, to cope with getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, but also the reward that comes with that, you know, seeing the most clear sky I've ever seen, jumping into a pool of water once I'd got over the other side of Heart Attack Hill. And I met some absolutely incredible people on that trip, but also, you know, the camaraderie amongst that. The night of the coyotes, I remember there was a young woman on the trip and she was really fearful. And so I slept with her that night to make sure that we kind of faced the coyotes together. I don't know how power in numbers would have helped us out there, but there was something around that kind of like acknowledging how she was feeling, acknowledging how I was feeling. We've got this together. So a sense of empowerment also.
I love that. And it's kind of going back to what you were saying about how you sort of pick on up on other people and want to help as well. You know, I'm going to ask you this one. What's your karaoke go-to song?
Dance with Somebody, Whitney Houston.
So ambitious. I love it. I love it. Raise that bar.
Raised it high. I mean, recently, I think it was in COVID times, and when we were about to leave, when we were allowed to leave the house, whatever point that was, I do remember, though, it wasn't Whitney Houston I blasted, it was Adele, Rolling in the Deep, as I drove around. I won't sing it out loud now because I'll deafen everybody who's listening along to this podcast, but I still remember the day I wound the windows down in my Volvo. And I say in my Volvo because it's the most unsexy car going, but I, you know, just felt free singing that at full pelt going down the country lane. So yeah, maybe that might appear on my karaoke list at some point.
Fabulous. I'm all about the karaoke at the moment, having just been in Ibiza with my pop choir, and we were singing a whole sort of rave set in four part harmony actually, and we were booked to sing at a hotel before their karaoke, but because there were like 50 of us, we then took over the karaoke. So yeah, just best night ever.
I love karaoke, as you know.
We need to do it again.
We do.
So I think that's a good place to stop. But before I do end it there, I want to say thank you so much for coming on this podcast, because it's been such an honor to have you here. And is there anything that you wanted us to ask that we haven't asked, or do you have any closing thoughts? I'm going to hand the platform to you.
Just to say thank you, because I always think it's never in the learning, it's in the reflection of the learning. And coming on today's podcast has made me really think back to my early years and the pattern of how that's brought forward. And there's quite clearly some reflections, not only of who I was as a child that also plays through as an adult, but also the importance and influence that others have in your life to shape you to be the human that you are.
You've been listening to Genuine Humans, brought to you by Social Element. If you loved what you heard, remember to rate, review, and subscribe.